session number 9364, reel 9.
Mr. Bethel, reel 9.
Anyway, Tweedy went fishing. They used to get go down to the garage proprietor and say, "Can we have a truck, please?" He said, "Everybody wants a truck, mister. What do you want a truck for?" He said, "Well, we'll give you some salmon if you let us have your truck." If they discovered the boat, they smashed it up, and the police did, because they were illicit. Well, all of a sudden, it dawned on the Americans that they needed the law. The law is the most important thing. It is today in this country. You can watch it crumbling as a result of insufficient...
What happened to Tweedy then?
They wanted him in their borders, in the FBI. And when he came to see me, he'd been touring the continent for 2 years in a Volvo truck with his wife. And she had her own television program in America. And Tweedy was doing rubbings of all the churches in the continent and the rubbings of this England.
What happened to you, anyway? Could you explain in more detail what happened to you when you actually came home from Russia and the order of events?
Well, I'll stick to that now. What happened to me? I went through, of course, like being a good soldier. I remember Tweedy saying to me, if I was a woman, I'd find a good steady bloke. And I suppose I was a good steady bloke. I fell in love with my sweetheart. Well, she had been my sweetheart. Even when I left for the Amethyst, she kissed me goodbye on the parade ground down there with her mother and her sister, you know.
How old were you at this time when you came back from Russia?
17. 17 and a half, I suppose.
You're still very young then.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't very old. But don't you follow that? When you're waiting to die and you say, "I'm never going to leave Russia, I know I'm going to die here, because, there won't be much chance of getting out if we're going to stay here much longer." And you suddenly come home and find yourself kind of resurrected. You say, "I'm going to find a girl. I'm going to have a girl of my own. I'm going to do things that I couldn't have dreamt of doing." You kind of got the handcuffs off. And anyway, I'd spent 6 months hobbling down here because of my foot. It had to bend, you see. And
you were saying about your... Did you decide to get married?
Oh, no. I was everything practical. I was going to be sensible. I adored her. She was a beautiful girl. And she died when I came home from Malta afterwards. But... there was no nonsense. Everything was... We used to go to the King's just to buy a box of chocolates, and everything was hunky-dory.
You were still in the Marines. Where were you based?
Here, at Forton. And,
in Gosport?
In Gosport, yeah, Forton Barracks.
And what were your duties?
Well, nothing. Couldn't do much, could I? Hobbled and I had hobbled around, with this hammered toe being gradually becoming strong. And,
how long was it before you were taken into hospital?
Oh, not long. When I went to pass for the, they wanted to get rid of everybody. They didn't care how they got rid of you. They said, "Get out. We don't want you anymore. You can go and die next week, but you don't want you this week."
How did you feel about this attitude?
Well, as has happened, I think that you must realise that there wasn't sufficient work anyway. And I feel this, that any one nation could make all the things the rest of the world needs with this chip and God knows what, and they're bound to be out of work.
But what about 1920?
Yeah, starting to become like that, isn't it? Not so much so, because the coal mines were still working pretty hard. And
had you anticipated an entire career in the Marines?
I had to. No option, no anything else. If you wanted to support a wife, you had to do something. That is why that shop was built.
So how did you feel about them wanting you to leave?
Well, blow their winter wines out, not so cold as man's ingratitude, isn't it? Our teeth are not so sharp or something, I'm not quite at all. You begin to think to yourself, well, my mother was really worried. She said you'll have to go and learn to be a mechanic. She knew of a chap down at Deal, Wyburn. He was a motor mechanic. And to her, this was tragedy. To Dad, this was tragedy. You know, dear, wouldn't leave the Corps. Oh, goodness. There were so many like us, you see. They were father and son. And they were brothers. There were dozens, it seems to be. Brothers and fathers and all belonged. They worked for the Marines. They were Marines. The stamps. There used to be a joke in the Marines. Did your mother wheel you in a pram? That was supposed to be funny, which it was in its day. No.
So you decided to have the operation on your foot so that you could stay in?
Yeah. And
where did you go?
Hasler. In Hasler. Hasler. When you realise it was built 100 years before the first stickable postage stamp, the penny black. It's hard to believe that, isn't it?
How long were you in hospital?
Oh, about a month, I suppose, or maybe less, a fortnight. They catch you longer than they do today. They poke you out inside of no time today, don't they?
Was the operation a success?
Oh, yes. No bother. It was no bother before, it was no bother after. But I still believe, as the Marines obviously did then, it is essential to have the better runner you'll be if your toes are springy, are out straight, not curled up underneath you.
Had this worried you when you were in Russia?
No, never. I was probably fitter and stronger than most. When I did that 100-verst march over rotten terrain, I suppose I was as fit as anybody, and I could have gone on forever. I felt that way. But lots of other chaps, you see them, oh God, their feet were bad and God, and they were bigger than, or older than I was.
What happened then when you were released from hospital?
Well, then I had this six-month paradise. All down the road, you could hear, I'm forever blowing bubbles, or I'm going to meet my girl in a minute. And I bet just had bacon and egg, and that's marvellous. What more do you want?
Why was it 6 months paradise? What do you mean?
Well, because I had this girl. I used to go and meet her from the shop. We used to finish it up at 7, I'd say. Right. And possibly take me bike down. She'd have a ride on my step. Luxury. And then I said, well, shall we go into the pictures or to the King's Theatre? On Wednesdays, the King's Theatre generally, and this kind of thing, you know, paradise.
Where were you living?
Living next door. That house was my original home next door.
So you were living with your family?
Yes.
Were you still a Marine?
Oh, yeah, in the Marines, but when I was off, like, that was my base, I would say.
Did you have to live in barracks?
Oh, yes.
And where were they?
Down Fortin Road. You know, I remember first time I kissed her goodnight outside that barracks. I had to go in, 12 o'clock, I had to be in, and she had to go on. I couldn't escort her home. We were too late. We'd been to a party with her parents and mine. Her brother married my brother, my sister. We were pretty close. She was very gallant in Malta, very brave. I'll tell you all about it later.
So, whilst you were living in the barracks, what were your work duties?
Well, very little. I get up in the morning, possibly hobble down and sand the river valley with the other herbs. You had to keep yourself clean, scrub your, the same old thing, 6 o'clock, river valley, 6:30, scrub your barrack room out, make your bed up, go down for tea and whatever you had to eat, lunchtime, and then the evening you could go out. And that was a nice to go and meet my girl.
What did you do during the daytime?
Well, bugle practice. Or I didn't do that because it was simply a case of waiting to get your foot right. You couldn't do anything, not a great deal.
Were you on semi-sick leave?
No, I could have had leave probably if I'd asked for it. I did get leave, no doubt, but semi-sick in the barracks.
Were you still a bugler?
Oh, yes.
You applied to be a private?
No, I was still a bugler, but I didn't have a bugle anymore because my bugle was in Russia. They gave me a gun, and I didn't know that I'd never fired a rifle in my life. But I went on listening post with it right outside, like a mug, and I was in there in the trench when the Russian fired at our bloke in front and all that kind of thing. But I had no bugle, they kept that. Whether the Russian kids have got it now, I don't know. But bugle number 76, Bougie, which it was, is in Russia, according to me.
Did they not give you another bugle when you came home?
No. I don't think so. I kind of went to turn over to the ranks.
And how did you apply to become a private?
Oh, you did this automatically, you know. And you went past the doctor. That was when they caught me for my toe.
Did you have to be a certain age?
Yes, 17. Well, I had become 17 before I could do it. But my original bloke I relieved on the Amethyst was becoming a private. He was leaving the bugler to be a private.
Did you have to undertake any other tests other than the medical?
Well, you had to have a third class certificate, which is a lot of them find a job to pass there. They
what
write
did you have
so
to do
badly.
For
beg your pardon?
What did you have to do for that?
A bit of mental arithmetic and writing a few words, spell decently. That the second class took you through to sergeant. The first class were an officer. I had a first.
Was this all written work, no practical?
Oh, no, written. First was essay, 500 words. What did I write on? Why the population of Australia was so small and India was so large. Things like that. They were fair, almost a matriculation. First class certificate.
Did you have to undergo any combat training for this?
No, at Deal you did. Bandit training and that.
But that was later.
That was later. When you went down, when it got you down there, when we went down to Deal, the place, there's three barracks, north, south, east and west barracks down at Deal. And the north, south, east. There wasn't a west on the mug. The green was perfect. Gorgeous. It was as good as a county cricket ground. I used to play cricket on it. I'd love to have played, but as a bugler or a young private, you wouldn't be recognised.
When were you posted to Deal?
About 6 months after the operation, 5 months after the operation, I reckon. And they deemed I was all right then. Went down. There were 36 drummers in my squad of about 50. Ex-drummers, where the bottleneck had kind of unleashed. And it was a brilliant squad. Oh, God. They could have produced a boxing team that would have been almost international. They could have produced brilliant athletes. One footballer would have been in the first division, I reckon. They were brilliant. And ex-drummers were considered to be a cut above the average.
Had you received your promotion by this time?
Oh, no, dear. Promotion? No, you were private. You were just nothing.
No, had you been promoted from bugler to private when you went to Deal?
Yes, you were private, Bethel, see, and down you went with all the other herbs, of which there were 36. There was no chance. You got the King's Badge if you were good enough. There was no chance of getting the King's Badge. There were 36 King Badges there. They're all buglers. I wasn't terribly smart. I wouldn't say I was ever very smart. Not so smart as my father. He was always tiddly. Absolutely. His moustache was, I couldn't say brill creamed, but that wax on, you know, and all. I was more of a dreamer, I think.
How important was appearance then?
How important?
Was appearance.
Oh, everything. And they were all like fashion models, you know, and they were all brilliant. You couldn't read a dud. At Olympia, we had two people boxing together that were stars. Ailing, dead now, seen him die, gone up, was paralysed and goodness knows what, won everything. Chum of Cheaties, Tweedy Scott, brilliant. PTI he became eventually. I could have become a PTI, I could have done a million things I didn't do.
Did you participate in any sport?
Shooting, mainly. I was a good cricketer, but...
Could you give me some idea of your daily routine at Deal Barrack?
Deal, yes. Deal, parade, 8 o'clock. Cleaners new pin. It had to be. And it would be drilled all around the square, what they call close order drill, which is intended to create discipline. What would you do if a chap who was just coming from sea and he was a bit slumbicky, doing close order drill, sir? That's the kind of answer they wanted.
Could you explain what close order drill is?
Close order drill is St. Paul. Shall we talk about St. Paul? God said to St. Paul, I want you to do a job in the north of India, north of Italy. And St. Paul said, yes, fair enough. And God said, are you sure you can do it? And St. Paul said, when I say go, they go. When I say come, they come. I'm a centurion. He said, I've done all this. Don't worry about me. I can handle it. To God, of all people. This is according to the Bible. Yeah, when I say go, they go. If you stand at the wall and you train the fella to do exactly what he's told, he absolutely is disciplined to a... how can I say it? This goose step of Russia, to my opinion, is wrong. It is fearsome to think that grown men, grown scientists, should be doing the goose step. Anyway, that's my opinion.
What exactly was a close-order drill? How was it different from ordinary drill?
Because you demanded complete subjection to the person you were drilling. Then out. Put your head up. Hold your look your own height. Put your arm back. Turn your feet out. Turn them out more yet. This kind of thing. So that you became a zombie. And the whole thing is that to make an impression on foreigners, if you like, you adopt this militant attitude of correctness and perfectness. They pulled our flag down many years afterwards at Bazardou. We went and put it up, but he strutted it up and all the passion. Open it in your magazine to make noise, to create impression. And fearfulness, so that the enemy thought, my God, I'm going to quarrel with them. When they all turn, when Father turns, we all turn. God help you.
How did you respond to doing close order drill?
I think pride. I think when we marched up from Gosport Station to the barracks here, Gosport was in being, there's a station then. We were so proud. It was the King's Squad. The King's Squad, and your one that got the King's badge wore a cipher on his arm. He was a big shot, you know, in his way he'd made the grade completely. Lots of various selections as to his ability, was he the greatest? Yes, you know, and he got the King's cipher. This was by George V, I think, who originated it. And
did you find it physically hard?
Oh, yes. God, 11:30, you went to gyms, you had to jump three box horses. When you ran across the parade, across the green, where the chap instructor, or the hawk his name was, never forget him, smart as a pin, with a white cardigan on, you know, and all the PTO, and the white shoes. He was so smart that you couldn't help, and he was so honourable, such a lovely chap. He was an RMA chap, actually, down at Deal. They would take some of the RMA and take them down there. We weren't amalgamated at that time, you see. And Hawk was a lovely fellow. I thought he was, imagine, I used to think to myself, my God, you were like a new pin. Indeed, one chap had an operation down there, and I don't know, his intrals, the doctor said, were that clean that they were almost, looked as though they'd been scrubbed. So good physically, and and then in the afternoon back to drill again, or infantry training, shooting, of which I won the championship. I won the medal or the shooting prize every week, and he used to look at it. He used to say to Tweedy, we'd go ashore tonight, we're going to have a bit of dinner, and he said, I've got no money. I said, not if I've gone down the shooting gallery, I should win there. And I won it week after week after week after week after week. And
this rifle shooting or pistol shooting?
Yeah, rifle shooting. And you get what they call a sympathetic heart. You've either got it or you haven't. My father was a good rifle shot. What happens? Your brain controls your heart. Says, shut up, you. Don't you dare. This is the same implication you get with close order drill, I suppose. This complete subservience to the master. A form of hypnosis, maybe. Anyway.
So there was a weekly competition for money?
For shooting, yeah. And I won this week after week after week. Used to be in orders, private battle. I just said to Tweedy, come on, let's go. And we have that would be about 3 or 4 shillings. It was quite a lot of money. Enough to take you down and buy a good meal for two of you. And I say, well, hang on, I'll get the money. And they say, do this shoot and get the money. I remember Chater down there, the adjutant came down. And it was dark. He said, these blokes can see in the dark. Oh, Chater did, I know. He was a very strict officer, the adjutant. He was adjutant, and they took him over to the Sudanese and to train the Camel Corps. Of all things, not a very big man, but a wonderful man. I spoke to him afterwards. Of course, I'm liable to get my own ideas about things. I think boxing is no good for a start. I think that to bash another granddad with his poor hands, the thing God gave us, the hands of the musician, the surgeon, the talent is in the hands. He bashed his hands up on somebody else's skull. Anything. There was one heavyweight boxer in Grandad told me about who was in the pub with Grandad in the tavern. Imagine these, the ship inn or wherever it was, and this girl was cleaning pewter mugs with sand. I think they used shark skin or something to do it with. I don't know. It was harsh anyway. It's gritty. And he pulled a gold watch a lord had given him out of his pocket and said to this girl, would you give my watch a rubber, poor you, please? Gold watch. Given him by a lord. And he said, that was the kind of mugs we were dealing with. Granddad was no mug. But he was daft enough to get caught up with this. I suppose it was hard fighting.
Were you encouraged to box?
Yes. We had some great boxers. But I still don't think it's wise. I don't see where bashing somebody's teeth in and knocking the enamel off them and that, and giving this brain concussion can be any good.
You mentioned some of the officers. What were the relations like between you as privates and the officers and NCOs?
Well, I couldn't say I had any bad feelings towards any of them. Captain Shepherd, who I afterwards served in Malta as a colonel, when he was a marvellous athlete, he was a swimming champion, Hampshire swimming in those days. Of course, which wasn't as great as today. You feel awful when you talk about champions of the past, when you realise that people today could eat them for breakfast, and you think...
But were you proud of him at the time?
I beg your pardon?
Were you proud of him at the time?
Oh, God, yeah. Because you felt that he was honour to the core. He won the Officers' Championship of Boxing, and he never did anything that was spiteful. He was a great chap, a great sportsman. I wouldn't think a great tactician, maybe, I don't know.
What about the way in which the officers and NCOs treated you?
There were times when people you felt were mugs. I mean, you couldn't have had bigger fools than the First World War. You read history, I've read history. And what was it? I personally believe Margaret Thatcher's the finest leader we've had for years, but the Liberal leader.
But what about in the 1920s? What about the way they treated you then?
No, I can say that I didn't always agree with them because I felt they weren't clever enough. Maybe it's a big anything to say, because many of them were very clever. Many NCOs were very clever. My gunnery instructor was very clever, a sergeant. Lord Mayor of Stepney afterwards. Colour Sergeant Richardson did wonders with the Maoris in New Zealand. Tied to a 7-gun salute. I'm not going to argue with him. A lot of the officers were great. I mean, Richie's, I would think. People I've mentioned, which I should come across later. Williams, what's the attribute of an NCO? And you say, when you're passing for corporal, and my God, you had to go some to pass for corporal. You had to get in, and you were lucky. Because they didn't want you. They used to say, you're going outside to earn £5 a week? And this £5 was undreamable. £5 a week.
What were you earning as a Marine?
I allowed my wife £1.08 when I married her.
So you had less when you were unmarried?
And I had a few bob myself, about 5 bob, 10 bob, something like that. Not much. But they didn't have much outside either, dear. You were at least certain of getting a certain amount of money. Anyway, I must carry on with what I'm doing, otherwise you'll...